So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. UW-Madison Center's Midwest Center of Excellence for Vector-Borne Disease has just reworked its tick app, which is a very interesting concept. So two staffers from the center have agreed to talk about both the center and the tick app. So I want to thank Dr. Susan Paskowitz, who's chair of the UW-Madison Department of Entomology, an expert on biology and control of mosquitoes and ticks, and Bineke Braun, a veterinarian from the Netherlands who just completed her PhD at the National Wildlife Center and is specializing at the Midwest Center on tick-borne disease. Thank you both for helping Wisconsin Eye viewers understand both the tick and the center. So Dr. Susan, give us an overview of the center, how long it's been running and its goals, please.
Sure. So the Midwest Center of Excellence for Vector-Borne Disease was established in 2017. And it's one of five national centers that focus on diseases that are transmitted by mosquitoes and ticks primarily. It was started as a result of the introduction of Zika into our hemisphere and into the United States. So you may recall kind of our last major public health scare was Zika virus back in 2016. And at that point, the centers for disease control realized that we were seriously understaffed in terms of public health entomologists around the country, and they decided to fund these five centers to respond to future threats. So there's a center actually in New York, there's a center in Florida, there's one in Texas, and there's one in California. So we were very proud to have the fifth of the five centers housed here in Wisconsin. I can also say that our center is a regional center, so it's not just Wisconsin. We have partners in every state that borders us. We've got great partners both at the state departments of public health in each of those states, those folks who focus on things like Lyme disease and West Nile virus in their states, as well as people who are at the universities who are actively doing research to try to address some of these problems.
Thank you. Bineke, you were you're from the Netherlands, which is a beautiful, picturesque nation. Why did you decide to come to the Midwest Center and work and become a tick specialist?
Oh, that's a great question. I came here for my PhD to work on infectious disease in wildlife. So I worked with mice and prairie dogs and plague out west before I joined the center. So I was very much interested in these diseases that can be transmitted from wildlife to humans by mosquitoes and ticks and fleas. And so the Midwest Center of Excellence for Vector-Borne Disease, so vector-borne disease means those diseases transmitted by mosquitoes, ticks, fleas, was just a perfect opportunity for me to learn more about ticks. And tick-borne diseases, like Lyme disease, are a big problem in the Netherlands as well.
They are, okay. There's a reference to the Vector Records Repository. Dr. Susan, what is that, and how does that play into the development of the tick app, please?
Well, the Vector Records Repository is a place where we're encouraging everybody in our region to deposit information about the presence of the different kinds of mosquitoes that are associated with disease transmission, and similarly, the different kinds of ticks. You know, of course, the deer ticks are really important in this context, and Bineke will talk more about the tick app and what we're learning about deer ticks in our region. But it's not just the deer tick. We also, you know, are concerned about the Lone Star ticks, for example, which is something that we've been seeing more of in Wisconsin, and is definitely a problem as you go more south into southern Illinois in particular in our region. And then, too, we're worried about newly invading ticks in the United States. So there's a new tick called the longhorn tick that is quite remarkable in its biology. This is a tick that actually can reproduce without mating. So all you need is one female, and then you can get a huge established population as a result of that female. So the Vector Records Repository is a place to help us kind of track where all these different things are, identify when new things come in, and records on the infection rate in those vectors. And so it's actually been quite useful. One question we have is, when you have Lyme disease in ticks, how stable is that? You know, I could tell you what the rates are in Wisconsin, for example. Most ticks in Wisconsin, about 15 to say 25% of the deer ticks in the immature stage that we call a nymph, in that stage will be infected with Lyme. So one of our questions is, well, how long is that always going to be 15 to 25%? Are we going to see that continuing to climb? What happens when these ticks invade new areas? What do the infection rates look like then? And so there we see things like, you know, it takes a few years, and then maybe you'll see about 5% of the ticks, and then within 5 to 10 years, it's right up there in that 20-25% rate. And wow. We use the vector repository to look at other things. So we talk a lot about Lyme disease. Everyone in Wisconsin is familiar with Lyme, but people sometimes don't know that we have a number of other things that our deer ticks are transmitting, like anaplasmosis and babesiosis. And so we can do the same thing there. We can kind of track where they are, and when they're moving into new areas, get a sense of what the infection risks and rates look like in those new areas. So it's a very useful tool for us.
Lyme plus these other diseases, these can be critical in terms of someone's health, and even lethal, can't they, doctor?
They can. And one of the things that we see is that when the ticks move into new areas, which they've been doing over the last 20 to 30 years in Wisconsin, is that people who are responsible for healthcare don't always know that. You know, just this year, I had somebody tell me that they'd been to their doctor thinking that their partner had Lyme. And the doctor said, in Dane County, you couldn't get Lyme because there aren't any deer ticks here. That isn't true. You know, it might have been true 20 years ago, but things have changed a lot. And so the vector record repository helps us to map that change and to have the data to provide to the healthcare providers, so they know that the risk is here now.
Beenica, you have just shifted to specialize in ticks. Can you give us some overview takeaways of some major things that you've learned about ticks since you shifted your focus to ticks, just some major takeaways from your research?
Such a fun question, because I worked on fleas. Fleas have really fast life cycles. They sit on one host and specialize in one host. And what blew my mind about ticks is how long they lived. So when the egg hatches, the larva comes out, it takes a blood meal, it drops off, and then it might take a year before it becomes the nymph and finds another host. So ticks can live up to 2-3 years, and maybe even longer. We don't even know exactly. And I find that fascinating about ticks.
Oh, thank you. That was something I didn't learn. I hadn't known before. So talk to me, either of you. How has climate change changed ticks and illness in the state of Wisconsin, please?
Well, what I can tell you is that we have seen huge changes over the last 120 years or so. And probably most of those changes in tick populations, so the number that are out there in environment, are actually due to changes in our forests and in our deer populations rather than climate. I think climate is having an impact, but the majority of it is we logged off the forest, so they really need moist forested habitats. We logged off the forest around 1900. We hunted the deer almost to extinction around the same time. That meant that there just wasn't the right kind of ecological conditions for these ticks to thrive. So they probably got pushed back to really small refuges, a little bit of old growth forest. And then it took them a while as the forest regrew and the deer population regrew. We finally saw our first case of Lyme in the late 1960s, and our first deer tick was detected in the 1950s. So, you know, then it took 50 years or so before they expanded out and got to the problems that we see today. Going forward, we do think that as temperatures warm, there are some likely consequences. And one of those is that we'll see the ticks earlier in the season. So, you know, as it's there, certainly the cold winters help to suppress their activity. But as we get things up in the high 40s, low 40s, we're going to start to see ticks moving around much earlier in the year than they normally do. And along with that, we'll probably see some increases in the populations that may increase our risks.
I want to get to the tick app, but before I do, Doctor, talk to me about the increased incident rate of Lyme disease in Wisconsin.
Yes. You know, we would describe that, I think, appropriately as a slow burn epidemic. And what I mean by that is something that has really been flying under the radar for a long time. When I first got to Wisconsin in the 1990s, we had about 500 cases a year, about 400 or 500 cases a year. Now the state would report probably between 1,500 and 3,000 cases each year. That is almost certainly an underestimate, and maybe by as much as tenfold. So it may be a lot more like 30,000 cases of Lyme disease in our state alone. So, and this is a pattern that's repeated across the country. Wherever there's Lyme transmission, it's pretty seriously underreported. And so it's probably for most Wisconsinites, that may come as a surprise, but there's a lot of Lyme out there. And that in part may be due to more ticks in many more places than they were just 20 years ago.
Okay. Well, those are startling numbers that increase. So Beanike, you've been a part of the tick app from the ground. Why do we need a tick app, and how has it been tweaked in recent years? And just give us kind of a evolution of the tick app.
Oh, the evolution of the tick app. So I was present at the birth of the tick app. So I joined the Center of Excellence in October 2017. And the UW-Madison had been talking with Michigan State University and Columbia University to develop the tick app really as a citizen science tool. So that means it's a research tool. We learn a lot from the users, but also a piece of education and a lot of information about tick prevention. Why we need it, or why we thought we needed it, is we have a pretty good understanding where the ticks are in the environment, like Dr. Paskowitz said, but it doesn't necessarily matches with where the cases of Lyme disease. So there's a piece of human behavior, so what we do, our activities, our prevention methods that we use, that doesn't seem that we don't understand. So it's really for us to better understand our behavior and tick exposure. And so the first year, so 2018, was really a sort of proof of concept. Are people going to download the app? Or for one, can we make an app? Two, are people going to use it? And then can we use that information? So the first year, the goal for us really from a research perspective was, have people download the app and complete an enrollment survey to learn a little bit about the basic risk factors for our users. And then 2019, we were able to get the feature in there that you can take a picture of the tick that you find and send it to us. And we were hoping that people would start using the app on a daily basis. So every day, Steve, you would tell us, what kind of outdoor activities did I do? Did I find a tick on myself, yes or no, on my pet, a household member, to get a better idea of our daily activity patterns? And the app, if you allow the app to track your location, can also geolocate you. So we would have a really good idea of how much time do you spend in high risk areas versus low risk areas. And then we can combine that with tick exposure and prevention use. And this year, we're zooming even more in on that prevention use, because people say they do tick checks, but very few people report, for example, using bug spray consistently or wearing permethrin-treated clothing. So this year, the app also has a little welcome screen that tells you, hey, check for ticks today and put your bug spray on. And we ask people to go straight to the daily log to tell us, share with us, like, what kind of outdoor activities did you do? Did you find a tick? And so in return, the user can then send us the tick, and you can learn what tick bit you. So it makes a big difference in Wisconsin if it was a wood tick or a deer tick. Right. And we also try to estimate how long it has fed on you. So if it's completely flat or it was not attached, like, your chances of developing disease are very small, unless you missed one. And that was covered last week in your session with the Tick Center of Excellence in
Howard Young, yes, the foundation, yeah, Howard Young Foundation.
Yeah, right. They covered right. that very nicely, that a lot of their patients don't remember being bitten by a tick.
And then eventually, once they show the symptoms, yes, they need to have it diagnosed. Well, tell me about the number of people using the app. Has it grown dramatically from 18 to 19? And what's your enrollment goal for 2020?
So in 18, we had about 1,500 users in the United States, just over 700 in Wisconsin. 2019, we almost doubled those numbers. And so I hope this year we can hit 5,000. That would be amazing. What has been extremely fun to see is that we have a couple of users that are very good about doing those daily logs. So we have some super high power users that have completed over 100 daily logs. So these people have done, I think it's become part of your routine, right? Like you use your exercise app or your diet app. Every evening, you write down what you ate. And so I think there's some people that have made the tick app part of their daily routine to remind themselves to check for ticks. And in return, that is a great contribution for us to, for the research that we're doing.
Yeah, that was my next question. As the users, number of users have grown, what additional research skills does it give the Midwest Center then to talk about ticks and prevention and things like that? As you gather more data, how do you use more data? Either of you?
So it's, I think for me, it's been fascinating since we have it in New York area and in Wisconsin. So that first year we looked at what the profiles of the users were. And one of the biggest differences we saw, what we had never thought about, is weekly lawn mowing. So we asked people, how often do you mow your lawn in the spring and summer? And over 60% of Wisconsinites say, oh, I do this weekly, which was only a quarter of the participants that we got in New York. So there's a different behavioral pattern there. And the other thing I think we've learned in Wisconsin, and we knew there were ticks in yards in Wisconsin, but we asked people when they sent us a tick, where do you think you got the tick? Or where do you think the dog got the tick? And it's about 2/3 of people say it was in my yard or in my neighbor's yard. And we've always been thinking, when you think ticks in Wisconsin, you think woods, recreational areas. It was when I was hiking. You don't think it was when I was playing with the kids in the yard or playing with my dog playing fetch and I had to grab the ball or I was gardening. So I think that's been very cool for us to learn. And as we learn more, I think we will be able to tease apart sort of different user groups. Right. So we have our hunters who are very aware of ticks and they recognize ticks very well. And then we have more maybe me and Susan in Madison area where ticks feel as a dangerous piece. And so we can hopefully use the information we get to target our information, our tick prevention messaging better.
Dr. Susan, as more people participate, more data is available, then what are the long-term goals, maybe a year from now and 2 years from now with the tick app?
You know, ideally, if we can understand with much more clarity exactly what kinds of prompts or messages are effective in helping people remember to do those personal protective behaviors like using repellents or remembering to do a really careful tick check, looking at your kid when your kid comes in from playing in the yard, checking your pets, all those kinds of things. That would be a win for us if we can understand how we can better have people adapt those messages and actually use them, then we hope that that would reduce their risk of disease. If we can understand more too about what exactly behaviors they're doing when they're picking up a tick, is it gardening? Is it mowing the lawn? Are they more likely to actually find them in places that we don't traditionally think about as tick habitat, like the bright sunny lawn? Then maybe we got to rethink what our whole toolkit is, right, for trying to protect people from picking up ticks in those kinds of environments. And right. That might not be just messaging and warning people that those are now higher risk than we would have thought before, but maybe even things like, okay, what kind of treatment could you do? And is it mowing your lawn down to those weekly lawn mowing, but keep it nice and short? Or is it using some kind of grub control that would also get the ticks in the yard? Or, you know, those kinds of things that maybe we can combine to help Wisconsinites protect themselves right around their own houses.
Thank you. I signed up for the tick app this morning. And do I have this right that the tick app is now going to chart where I go and when every 15 minutes? Or did I misread the fine print?
So I don't know if you have an iPhone or an Android, iPhone. So the iPhone should be really good about asking you when you enter. It says, this app is tracking your location. Are you okay with that or not?
And I think I said yes. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Then we would be able to track your location. However, in our database, I will not be able to tell who you are. So it's anonymized data.
That's important from a privacy standpoint.
Where you live exactly, then maybe I could find you. But it's anonymized data. So you would be able to tell who you are if you look at all of the different patterns. I am not able to tell.
You are not able to tell.
Who you are.
Okay. What if I went up north, Vilas, Oneida counties, which probably have a lot more ticks than Dane counties. You'd be able to chart that and you'd be able to follow me, right? You would know that I'd be in Vilas County on Saturday?
If your battery is charged, yes. If your battery is charged and if you gave the permission to track your location consistently, then we could.
Okay. But then the burden's on me to complete the daily log to tell you whether I checked, what I did, my activity, whether I found a tick, whether I even checked. So, do I have the process right?
Correct.
Okay. And so what about that data? Because that raises privacy concerns.
You're linked with a unique identifier. So in my database, you are a sequence of numbers and letters, probably 25 in a row. And so we do match that GPS location with what you did. And so then I know this person that went from Dane County, I'm not sure where you're located, but went from Dane County to Oneida County.
Yes, or Vilas or Taylor or Pierce, yes.
Came back to Dane County. And 2 days later, you maybe found a tick and completed that tick report.
Right.
Then I can say, oh, and then you might have said, ooh, I think I got it in my yard. Then I look at your tick. So this would be the ideal situation.
Oh, I have to take a picture of my tick.
You could if you want to. And then you send me the tick picture of your tick. I'll look at it and I say, dear Steve, we think this is a deer tick nymph. It's about the season right now. So those poppy seeds you showed last year. And then if you've had it on you for about 2 days, we'll be able to tell that's a pretty chubby tick already. We'll say, we think it has fed on you for 2 days or more. So keep an eye out for symptoms and maybe you want to consult your physician to talk about prophylaxis. Well, at that point, I'm not gonna dive into all the nitty gritty, but when we do our analysis, the long-term view, we can then trace back and say, oh, this number person, which I don't know who that is, it's all numbers and letters, had a tick on them. It looked like it fed for about 2 to 3 days. If your GPS location was on, we can even go back and say, oh, actually, it was not in Dane County. You might have picked it up there. So in the ideal world, it would be fantastic if every user would allow us to GPS locate them. And if you would be willing to do those daily questionnaires and send us a picture. Okay. But that's a lot. That's a big ask. And so
what percentage of users allow GPS tracking?
Ooh, I don't know that from the top of my head. I can look that up and let you know after.
Okay. I just find that fascinating. So if I sign up for GPS tracking, then I'm tracked. I go north for a weekend. I mow my lawn at a cottage or something. But what if I forget to do the daily log? Then it's totally up to me to self-report. Oh, so I go up on Saturday, I come back on Monday, and then I haven't done my log, but I found a tick. So the whole system is based on me self-reporting, right?
Correct. Okay. I'm not going to call you. I'm not going to email you.
Okay. Well, that's just very interesting. How do you gauge the success this season?
Oh, actually, it feels like it's going a lot better than last year.
Okay.
So we have about 600 users in total this year that have been active on the app.
Okay.
A little over 200 in Wisconsin. So 220 people in Wisconsin have completed
some of those daily logs. We've gotten just over 600 pictures this year. And now I'm blanking on how many were from Wisconsin exactly, but the majority is from Wisconsin. And about half of those are from the person who's reporting, and the other half, you'll find this interesting, is from a dog. So this lots of people find ticks on their pets.
Wow. Dr. Susan, talk to me about the partnership with Columbia and Michigan State, please.
Sure. There's some really excellent researchers at those institutions who have great expertise on the piece that Binica's talking about, where we can link those movement patterns back to exposure risk. So kind of that's their specialty, is how do you take that GPS data and then understand more about, you know, where humans are in the environment. And our specialty really this year, I think, has been working on trying to get these identification pieces and systems up and working. And then this idea that if we message a little differently, then maybe people will use the toolkit, the tick checks, better. So more of a human behavioral piece on that side and prevention messaging.
Well, some of that is regional. Do we have in Wisconsin different tick characteristics than we do in the Northeast, which is also a center for ticks?
That's a really interesting question. There's a little bit of behavioral difference actually between our two regions in terms of the tick biology, but the way the ticks look and their interactions with people in our two regions are pretty similar. In other words, the ticks will be out there actively trying to find a host in the vegetation. These same ticks occur in the southern United States, and they don't behave like that down there. So there are some differences, you know, across the U.S., but our two regions are actually pretty similar in this particular Lyme disease arena.
Okay. Binicky, I have a specific example. Are you ready?
Okay.
I went north, and my sister took her dogs on a run, and I was there drinking coffee when she came back, and she found two ticks on her and three on the dogs. But she's not enrolled on the app. So I don't, since I'm now enrolled, I don't have a obligation or a duty to report that she found five deer ticks after a run with her dogs, do I?
You could, you don't have to.
Really? But I thought since I'm the user, I only had to report ticks that I encountered, but I can turn in my sister?
You can share about your sister or about your sister's dog. So we would consider that. So for our research purposes, we would consider that a risk factor, right? So in this case, we would say, even though this user was drinking coffee on the porch, their household member or the pet in the household, they did find ticks on them. So that means you are in an area where ticks are present.
Okay.
And so your specific behavior then didn't expose you.
Okay, but it'd be better if I could talk my sister into enrolling in the tick app, because she is living up north and she's very, very aware of ticks because she takes her dogs on morning runs. So that would be the ideal situation, correct?
That would be perfect, yes.
Okay, all right. Funding. Dr. Susan, who funds the tick app?
The tick app is funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention because they're the funder for all of the five centers of excellence.
Yes.
I think Columbia also recently has a grant from the National Science Foundation, which is contributing some of the expertise for tick identification this year.
Okay. We're almost out of time. Just a couple more questions. How has COVID-19 affected the research or the tick app project?
Well, COVID-19 is having a big impact on our ability to do a lot of our surveillance work and our tick control work. The tick app may be a little bit differently because that's, you know, a tool that people will have in their pockets. But Binica and the team have been working on thinking about how COVID might affect people's interaction with nature. So are they spending more time outdoors in parks or less because they're worried about encountering people? So those are some questions that are included if people choose to answer them. And we're hoping to get some really unique and interesting information this year.
Well, Binica, do you think COVID-19 means less reliable data just on ticks and Lyme disease? Or is it going to enhance your research?
Ooh, I think that we are probably spending more time in our yards and outdoors. So I suspect that we'll get more tick reports in. I think the data will be similar, equally reliable.
Okay.
I'm very curious to see how it affects our behavior. If we are suddenly more aware about how vulnerable we can be to disease, and you may be more likely to spend some time researching these ticks that you're now suddenly finding on your dogs or on yourself. Also, Steve, I should say, all of the data is stored at highly secure servers. So it's a secure location. I thought I should say that because you gave me very nice and specific details. So it's, and it's overseen by institutional review board. So we're under tight.
Yeah, got it. Okay, well, you've been very informative. This is very interesting. So my final question is this. Your elevator speech, somebody says tick app, why should I participate? Why should I sign up for the tick app? Dr. Susan, you go first.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask Binika. I would say sign up for the tick app because you and your family, if you live in Wisconsin, all 72 of our counties now have populations of ticks and you're at risk. And you can help us to do something about that by signing up for the tick app.
Thank you. Okay. Binika, elevator speech. Why should I sign up for the tick app?
Well, Steve, you should sign up for the tick app because it's an amazing smartphone tool that you can send us a picture of your tick. We can tell you what it is, and you're helping researchers better understand where and how we are exposed to ticks. And that will help design better prevention methods to prevent tick bites for you and your family and generations to come.
You want me to send you a picture of my dead tick or still alive tick?
Whichever one you have.
No. We can identify them both.
I understand. Okay, thanks very much. Dr. Susan Paskowitz is chair of the UW-Madison Department of Entomology, and Beneke Braun is a veterinarian from the Netherlands, just completed her PhD with the National Wildlife Center, specializing for the Midwest Center for Excellence for Vector-Borne Disease on Tick-borne disease. Thank you so much. You have a fascinating app, and I'm now a member. So I better remember to complete my log. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining it, for having us.
Thank you
very much. Thanks.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.